Girls. I thought the pinto beans with salmon and mint were really, really, you know, Elizabeth says, walking into the living room of my apartment, and in one graceful movement kicking off both satin and suede Maud Frison pumps and flopping onto the couch. Good, Patrick. My God, it was expensive, and then, bristling, she bitches, it was only pseudo-novel. Was it my imagination, or were there goldfish on the tables? I ask, undoing my Brooks Brothers suspenders while searching the refrigerator for a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc. Anyway, I thought it was hip. Christy has taken a seat on the long, wide sofa, away from Elizabeth, who stretches out lazily. Hip, Patrick? She calls out. Donald Trump eats there! I locate the bottle and stand it on the counter, and before finding a wine opener, stare at her blankly from across the room. Yes? Is this a sarcastic comment? Guess, she moans, and follows it with a duh, so loud that Christy flinches. Where are you working now, Elizabeth? I ask, closing drawers. Polo outlet or something? Elizabeth cracks up at this and says blithely, while I uncork the acacia, I don't have to work, Bateman. And after a beat, she adds, bored, you, of all people, should know how that feels, Mr. Wall Street. She's checking her lipstick in a Gucci compact. Predictably, it looks perfect. Changing the subject, I ask, who chose that place anyway? I pour the two girls wine and then make myself a J&B on the rocks with a little water. The restaurant, I mean. Carson did, or maybe Robert. Elizabeth shrugs, and then after snapping the compact shut, staring intently at Christy, asks, you look really familiar. Did you go to Dalton? Christy shakes her head no. It's almost 3 a.m. I'm grinding up a tab of ecstasy and watching it dissolve in the wine glass I plan to hand to Elizabeth. This morning's topic on the Patty Winter Show was people who weigh over 700 pounds, what can we do about them? I switch on the kitchen lights and find 2 more tabs of the drug in the freezer, then shut the lights off. Elizabeth is a 20-year-old hardbody who sometimes models in Georges Marchiano ads, and who comes from an old Virginia banking family. We had dinner earlier tonight with 2 friends of hers, Robert Farrell, 27, a guy who's had a rather sketchy career as a financier, and Carson Whittle, who was Robert's date. Robert wore a wool suit by Belvest, a cotton shirt with French cuffs by Charvet, an abstract patterned silk crepe tie by Hugo Boss, and sunglasses by Ray-Ban that he insisted on wearing during the meal. Carson wore a suit by Yves Saint Laurent Rive Gauche and a pearl necklace with matching pearl and diamond earrings by Harry Winston. We had dinner at Free Spin, the new Albert Leoman restaurant in the Flatiron District, then took the limousine to Nell's, where I excused myself, assuring an irate Elizabeth I'd be right back, and directed the chauffeur to the meatpacking district, where I picked up Christy. I made her wait in the back of the locked limousine, while I re-entered Nell's and had drinks with Elizabeth and Carson and Robert in one of the booths up front, empty since the place had no celebrities in it tonight, a bad sign. Finally, at 2:30, while Carson bragged drunkenly about her monthly flower bill, Elizabeth and I split. She was so pissed off about something Carson told her was in the latest issue of W that she didn't even question Christie's presence. In the ride back toward Nell's, Christy had admitted that she was still upset about the last time we shared together, and that she had major reservations about tonight, but the money I've offered is simply too good to pass up, and I promised her that nothing like last time will be repeated. Though she was still scared, a few shots of vodka in the back of the limo, along with the money I'd given her so far, over $1,600, relaxed her like a tranquilizer. Her moodiness turned me on, and she acted like a total sex kitten when I first handed her the cash amount, 6 bills attached to a Hewlin's silver money clip. But after I urged her into the limo, she told me that she might need surgery after what happened last time, or a lawyer. So I wrote out a check to cash, in the amount of $1,000, but since I knew it would never be cashed, I didn't have a panic attack about it or anything. Looking over at Elizabeth right now in my apartment, I'm noticing how well endowed she is in the chest area, and I'm hoping that after the ecstasy hits her system, I can convince the two girls to have sex in front of me. Elizabeth is asking Christy if she's ever met some asshole named Spicy or been to Obar. Christy is shaking her head. I hand Elizabeth the ecstasy-laden Sauvignon Blanc while she stares at Christy like she was from Neptune, and after recovering from Christy's admission, she yawns. Anyway, Obar sucks now. It's terrible. I went to a birthday party there for Malcolm Forbes. Oh my God, please. She downs the wine, grimacing. I take a seat in one of the chrome and oak sotsass chairs and reach over to the ice bucket that sits on the glass-top coffee table, adjusting the bottle of wine in order to chill it better. Immediately, Elizabeth makes a move for it, pouring herself another glass. I dissolve two more tabs of the ecstasy in the bottle before bringing it into the living room. A sullen Christy sips her untainted wine cautiously and tries not to stare at the floor. She still seems scared, and finding the silence unbearable or incriminating, she asks Elizabeth where she met me. "Oh, God," Elizabeth starts, moaning as if she falsely remembered something embarrassing. "I met Patrick at, oh, God, the Kentucky Derby in 87, and..." She turns to me. "You were hanging out with that bimbo Allison something. Stool?"
"Pool, honey," I reply calmly. "Allison Pool."
"Yeah, that was her name," she says. Then, with unmasked sarcasm, "hot number."
"What do you mean by that?" I ask, offended.
"She was a hot number." Elizabeth turns to Christy and unfortunately says, "If you had an American Express card, she'd give you a blowjob." And I'm hoping to God that Christy doesn't look over to Elizabeth, confused, and say, "But we don't take credit cards." To make sure this doesn't happen, I bellow, "Oh, bullshit!" But good-naturedly. "Listen," Elizabeth tells Christy, holding her hand out like a fag, offering gossipy information. "This girl worked at a tanning salon and..." And in the same sentence, without changing tone, "What do you do?" After a long silence, Christy turning redder and even more scared, I say, "She's my cousin." Slowly, Elizabeth takes us in and says, "Uh-huh." After another long silence, I say, "She's from France." Elizabeth looks at me skeptically, like I'm completely crazy, but chooses not to pursue this line of questioning, and asks instead, "Where's your phone? I've got to call Harley." I move over to the kitchen and bring the cordless phone to her, pulling up its antenna. She dials a number and, waiting for someone to answer, stares at Christy. "Where do you summer?" she asks. "Southampton?" Christy looks at me and then back at Elizabeth and quietly says, "No." "Oh, God," Elizabeth wails. "It's his machine." "Elizabeth," I point at my Rolex. "It's 3 a.m. "He's a goddamn drug dealer," she says, exasperated. "These are his peak hours."
"Don't tell him you're here," I warn.
"Why would I?" she asks.
Distracted, she reaches for her wine and downs another full glass and makes a face.
"This tastes weird."
She checks the label, then shrugs.
"Harley? It's me. I need your services. Translate that any way you'd like. I'm at..."
She looks over at me.
"You're at Marcus Halberstam's," I whisper.
"Who?" Leaning in, she grins mischievously.
"Marcus Halberstam," I whisper again.
"I want the number, idiot." She waves me away and continues.
"Anyway, I'm at Mark Hammerstein's, and I'll try you later, and if I don't see you at Canal Bar tomorrow night, I'm going to sick my hairdresser on you. Bon voyage." "How do I hang this thing up?" she asks, even though she expertly pushes the antenna down and presses the off button, tossing the phone onto the Schrager chair that I've moved next to the jukebox.
"See?" I smile. "You did it."
20 minutes later, Elizabeth is squirming on the couch, and I'm trying to coerce her into having sex with Christy in front of me. What started out as a casual suggestion is now at the forefront of my brain, and I'm insistent. Christy stares impassively at a stain I hadn't noticed on the white oak floor, her wine mostly untouched. "But I'm not a lesbian," Elizabeth protests again, giggling. "I'm not into girls."
"Is this a firm no?" I ask, staring at her glass, then at the near-empty bottle of wine.
"Why'd you think I'd be into that?" she asks.
Because of the ecstasy, the question is flirtatious, and she seems genuinely interested. Her foot is rubbing against my thigh. I moved over to the couch, sitting between the two girls, and I'm massaging one of her calves.
"Well, you went to Sarah Lawrence, for one thing," I tell her.
"You never know."
"Those are Sarah Lawrence guys, Patrick," she points out, giggling, rubbing harder, causing friction, heat, everything.
"Well, I'm sorry," I admit. "I don't usually deal with a lot of guys who wear pantyhose on the street."
"Patrick, you went to Patrick. I mean, Harvard. Oh, God, I'm so drunk. Anyway, listen, I mean, wait."
She pauses, takes a deep breath, mumbles an unintelligible remark about feeling bizarre, then after closing her eyes, opens them and asks,
"Do you have any Coke?"
I'm staring at her glass, noticing that the dissolved ecstasy has slightly changed the color of the wine. She follows my gaze and takes a gulp of it, as if it were some kind of elixir that could soothe her increasing agitation. She leans her head back, woozily, on one of the pillows on the couch.
"Or Halcyon. I'd take a Halcyon."
"Listen, I would just like to see the two of you get it on," I say innocently.
"What's wrong with that?
It's totally disease-free."
"Patrick," she laughs, "you're a lunatic."
"Come on," I urge. "Don't you find Christy attractive?"
"Let's not get lewd," she says.
But the drug is kicking in, and I can sense that she's excited but doesn't want to be.
"I'm in no mood to have lewd conversation."
"Come on," I say. "I think it would be a turn-on."
"Does he do this all the time?"
Elizabeth asks Christy. I look over at Christy. Christy shrugs, noncommittal, and studies the back of a compact disc before setting it on the table next to the stereo.
"Are you telling me you've never gotten it on with a girl?"
I ask, touching a black stocking, then, beneath it, a leg.
"But I'm not a lesbian," she stresses, "and no, I never have."
"Never?" I ask, arching my eyebrows. "Well, there's always a first time."
"You're making me feel weird,"
Elizabeth moans, losing control of her facial features.
"I'm not," I say, shocked.
Elizabeth is making out with Christy, both of them naked on my bed. All the lights in the room burning, while I sit in the Louis Montoni chair on the side of the futon, watching them very closely, occasionally repositioning their bodies. Now I make Elizabeth lie on her back and hold both legs up, open, spreading them as wide as possible. Then I push Christy's head down and make her lap at her cunt. Not suck on it, but lap at it, like a thirsty dog, while fingering the clit. Then, with her other hand, she sticks two fingers into the open, wet cunt, while her tongue replaces the fingers. And then she takes the dripping fingers she's fucked Elizabeth's cunt with and forces them into Elizabeth's mouth, making her suck on them. Then I have Christy lie on top of Elizabeth and make her suck and bite at Elizabeth's full, swollen tits, which Elizabeth is also squeezing. And then I tell the two of them to kiss each other hard. And Elizabeth takes the tongue that's been licking at her own small, pink cunt into her mouth, hungrily, like an animal. And uncontrollably they start humping each other, pressing their cunts together, Elizabeth moaning loudly, wrapping her legs around Christy's hips, bucking up against her. Christy's legs spread in such a way that from behind I can see her cunt, wet and spread, and above it, her hairless pink asshole. Christy sits up and turns herself around, and while still on top of Elizabeth, presses her cunt into Elizabeth's gasping face, and soon, like in a movie, like animals. The two of them start feverishly licking and fingering each other's cunts. Elizabeth, totally red-faced, her neck muscles straining like a madwoman's, tries to bury her head in Christie's pussy, and then spreads Christie's ass cheeks open and starts tonguing the hole there, making guttural sounds. "Yeah," I say in monotone. "Stick your tongue up that bitch's asshole." While this is going on, I'm greasing with Vaseline a large white dildo that's connected to a belt. I stand up and hoist Christie off Elizabeth, who is writhing mindlessly on the futon, and I attach the belt around Christie's waist, and then I turn Elizabeth around and position her on all fours, and I make Christie fuck her with it doggy style while I finger Christie's cunt, then her clit, then her asshole, which is so wet and loose from Elizabeth's saliva, I'm able to force my index finger into it effortlessly, and her sphincter tightens, relaxes, then contracts around it. I make Christie pull the dildo out of Elizabeth's cunt and have Elizabeth lie on her back while Christie fucks her in the missionary position. Elizabeth is fingering her clit while madly French-kissing Christie until, involuntarily, she brings her head back, legs wrapped around Christie's pumping hips, her face tense, her mouth open, her lipstick smeared by Christie's cunt juice, and she yells, "Oh God, I'm coming! I'm coming, fuck me, I'm coming!" Because I told both of them to let me know when they had orgasms, and to be very vocal about it. Soon it's Christie's turn, and Elizabeth eagerly straps on the dildo and fucks Christie's cunt with it, while I spread Elizabeth's asshole and tongue it, and soon she pushes me away and starts fingering herself desperately. Then Christie puts the dildo on again, and she fucks Elizabeth in the ass with it, while Elizabeth fingers her clit, bucking her ass up against the dildo, grunting until she has another orgasm. After pulling the dildo from her ass, I make Elizabeth suck on it before she straps it on again, and while Christie lies on her back, Elizabeth pushes it easily into her cunt. During this, I lick Christie's tits and suck hard on each nipple until both of them are red and stiff. I keep fingering them to make sure they stay that way. During this, Christie has kept on a pair of thigh-high suede boots from Henri Bendel that I've made her wear. Elizabeth, naked, running from the bedroom, blood already on her, is moving with difficulty, and she screams out something garbled. My orgasm had been prolonged, and its release was intense, and my knees are weak. I'm naked, too, shouting, "You bitch! You piece of bitch trash!" at her. And since most of the blood is coming from her feet, she slips, manages to get up, and I strike out at her with the already wet butcher knife that I'm gripping in my right hand, clumsily, slashing her neck from behind, severing something, some veins. When I strike out a second time while she's trying to escape, heading for the door, blood shoots even into the living room, across the apartment, splattering against the tempered glass and the laminated oak panels in the kitchen. She tries to run forward, but I've cut her jugular, and it's spraying everywhere, blinding both of us momentarily, and I'm leaping at her in a final attempt to finish her off. She turns to face me, her features twisted in anguish, and her legs give out after I punch her in the stomach and she hits the floor, and I slide in next to her. After I've stabbed her 5 or 6 times, the blood spurting out in jets, I'm leaning over to inhale its perfume. Her muscles stiffen, become rigid. She goes into her death throes. Her throat becomes flooded with dark red blood, and she thrashes around as if tied up, but she isn't, and I have to hold her down. Her mouth fills with blood that cascades over the sides of her cheeks, over her chin. Her body, shaking spasmodically, resembles what I imagine an epileptic goes through in a fit. And I hold down her head, rubbing my dick, stiff, covered with blood, across her choking face until she's motionless. Back in my room, Christie lies on the futon, tied to the legs of the bed, bound up with rope. Her arms above her head, ripped pages from last month's Vanity Fair stuffed into her mouth. Jumper cables hooked up to a battery are clipped to both breasts, turning them brown. I had been dropping lit matches from Le Relais onto her belly, and Elizabeth, delirious and probably overdosing on the ecstasy, had been helping before I turned on her, and chewed at one of her nipples until I couldn't control myself and bit it off, swallowing. For the first time, I noticed just how small and delicately structured Christie is. Was. I start kneading her breasts with a pair of pliers. Then I'm mashing them up. Things are moving fast. I'm making hissing noises. She spits out the pages from the magazine, tries to bite my hand. I laugh when she dies. Before she does, she starts crying. Then her eyes roll back in some kind of horrible dream state. In the morning, for some reason, Christie's battered hands are swollen to the size of footballs. The fingers are indistinguishable from the rest of her hand, and the smell coming from her burnt corpse is jolting, and I have to open the Venetian blinds, which are spattered with burnt fat from when Christie's breaths burst apart, electrocuting her, and then the windows to air out the room. Her eyes are wide open and glazed over, and her mouth is lipless and black, and there's also a black pit where her vagina should be, though I don't remember doing anything to it. And her lungs are visible beneath the charred ribs. What is left of Elizabeth's body lies crumpled in the corner of the living room. She's missing her right arm and chunks of her right leg. Her left hand, chopped off at the wrist, lies clenched on top of the island in the kitchen, in its own small pool of blood. Her head sits on the kitchen table, and its blood-soaked face, even with both eyes scooped out and a pair of Alain Miquelet sunglasses over the holes, looks like it's frowning. I get very tired looking at it, and though I didn't get any sleep last night and I'm utterly spent, I still have a lunch appointment at Odeon with Jem Davies and Alana Burton at 1. That's very important to me, and I have to debate whether I should cancel it or not.